Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name is Dan Reichert. I'm one of the hosts of this here program. The other is sitting across from me, and that is my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, honey?
I'm the co-host.
You are? No. We have equal hosting duties.
Does co-host imply lesser duties?
When I hear co-host, I was going to say I think of Andy Richter, but I think he's frequently referred to as a sidekick or like an Ed McMahon. He's not really hosting.
I'm not your sidekick.
No, you're a co-host. Or no, you're just a fellow host. Maybe co means, I think it implies equal, right?
Yeah, because like if someone's a co-founder, then the other person's a co-founder too.
That is true. It's not like I'm the founder and I'm the co-founder. Mm-hmm. It is... Yeah, okay, so I guess we're both the co-hosts.
All right, I'm glad we figured that
out. Okay, we have two hosts. Anyway, it's the Reichert's here, me and Bunk. We're going to talk about Terrace House for the last time for the foreseeable future. It's we wrapped up Boys and Girls in the City.
The final set of episodes for Panning the Stream.
We did. We are going to cover in this episode, episodes 39 to the finale, episode 46. And yeah, I just don't really know if and when we'll have another one, because Aloha State, we've kind of heard across the board, is not a very good one.
Yeah,
and
I'm not really interested in that.
I'm not either. And Bonk, you have watched all of Opening New Doors,
yes.
But I have not seen, I've seen like two episodes of it, so who knows, maybe in some future if I watch them all, you know, on my own or whatever, we can just like discuss the whole season or something, but we'll see. But just prepare yourself, because this might be the last Terrace House for
At least it means that next time we watch a Terrace House together, it won't come with the added pressure of having to do a podcast about it. We could just binge it if we want or whatever.
That is true.
Assuming it's bingeable.
We can do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So let's go ahead and get down to these episodes here. Let's go with starting out with 39 here. We meet, we don't meet. We say goodbye to Momo-chan.
Right, yeah. She wants to take her ballet seriously. And she goes to meet the guy from her new agency. And he pretty much tells her, like, you're good enough to be here, but you're not. Like, you're one of the worst people here, so you have to be...
Right.
You're one of the worst of the best, like the dumbest kid in gifted class.
I see. Thanks for the plug, yes.
She's the worst dancer in the ballet company.
Which is still a pretty goddamn good ballet dancer.
Yeah.
From, you know, me being the trained eye of ballet that I am, I could tell that she had the talent. I've seen Black Swan. That's about the extent of what I know about ballet.
I saw a weird ballet show. The first time I ever saw Opeth live, it was in 2005... And it was at the New York Town Center, and it was an evening with Opeth. So it was just Opeth. They didn't have an opening band. But they did have an opening ballet troupe, and it was like these five women who danced to the song Deliverance, but it was like ballet dancing, obviously. And Deliverance is like a really heavy song, so it was an interesting contrast.
Ah.
But that's the extent of my familiarity with ballet.
Okay.
And Black Swan, of course.
Well, so between that and Black Swan and now Momo-chan.
I'm pretty much an expert on ballet.
We get it, basically.
We do.
So she, that ends the shortest tenure on Boys and Girls in the City, and also probably the most uneventful. There was a brief, maybe, hey, Armand might finally have a girlfriend or something here, and then that fizzled because she had other shit going on.
Yeah, she was just a smiley face in the house. She didn't really contribute to any drama or anything.
She was pleasant, but kind of came and went. But then we meet the new girl, Masako, who she is only referred to really as Martha here. So we will call her Martha. She is 22. Get this. She's a model.
Really?
Yes. She's a model and she's single.
Oh, how unusual.
Yes. And so she immediately seems to like the resident future serial killer Hayato. So she instantly is into him. It seems like even when he debuted in, I believe, the last set of episodes, wasn't he kind of universally like all the girls were a flutter about this guy?
Were they?
I seem to remember everyone being... Yeah, I remember they were like, oh, he's a player. Like, he seems like a player. And he was wearing some, like, Heartbreaker Club...
Oh, well, that doesn't mean that the girls were a flutter for you.
I thought I remember people... I thought the girls thought he was attractive.
Okay. I don't really remember that detail exactly, but I do remember them saying he was, like, a player. But I think it was just because he was being so forward. And really, in retrospect, he was really only being that way with Rico.
Yeah, and he sucked at that, which we're going to learn more of going on here. But basically, right off the bat, Armand is just like swinging for the fences because he has just, you know, struck out every which way for his entire duration of this whole part two of Boys and Girls in the City. Armand is the one guy that makes it through the entire thing. And man, there are so many times that we think something's going to happen with this very, very nice fella, and it just is not working out. Yeah. And so he asked Martha out early on, and she kind of like...
It's a lukewarm response. She seems way more interested in Hayato.
When she says as much, even. Like, she talks to Hayato at the table and is like, oh, hey, Armand asked me out, but just heads up, I liked you. So...
Yeah. Martha is great. She's very forward, and she's cool.
Very just genuine smile. Just seems like a happy, positive person. I liked a lot of Martha. Moving on to the next episode, we find out that Rikkopin and Martha both like Hayato. So, yeah, we have two aflutter, at least here, that we know that they're both interested.
Why do you keep saying aflutter?
Isn't that what ladies say when they're into a fella, is that they're aflutter? Their hearts are aflutter on the autumn breeze? That sounds like something.
Well, first of all, I think there's a difference between they are aflutter and their heart is aflutter.
Okay, well... For the record, their hearts are aflutter.
Okay. Yeah. Girls don't really talk like that. At least not since, like, the 1920s.
Look, I met you when I was, like, 30. I didn't really know how to talk to girls before that. So, sorry if I don't know girl talk that well. So,
yeah. Because girls have a very unique way of speaking, apparently.
Right. They say aflutter. That's the most common word among the female gender. So, you knew what you signed up for. We get a pasta cooking lesson with Chef Killer Hayato, who's going to teach Martha how to make pasta.
It almost sounds like he kills chefs.
I mean, he probably has. One of the women he's killed at some point was probably a chef.
Okay,
or a
chef in training. That's probably true.
Out of the dozens of Jack the Ripper-style slangs, he undoubtedly did. So he teaches Martha how to cook pasta. It's not like a straight-up date or anything like that, even though she's into him. You know, there's...
She definitely seems to take it like more than it was. To him, I think it was just a pasta lesson.
Right, and I think in his head, he's still got some stuff maybe going on with Rikkopin over here, and then she's got her her mind on Hayato, and this weird Armand thing's going on, so not a whole lot of, like, sparks here, just some nice cooking.
Oh, this episode sees, this is the one where Riko signs the contract, right? And is it the one, too, where she's, like, modeling on the terrace of the terrace house and starts to cry?
No, that's later on.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll get to that one for sure. So in this one, Burns passes his driver's test after this big, like, you know, he's failed it once or twice before, and Misaki seems like... disappointed in him for not succeeding. And so he comes back and, like, he has this sweet idea of, like, I want to surprise her and, like, I'd get to pick her up in a car for a date or whatever. But he doesn't tell her. So they're all sitting around like, so what happened? Did you pass the test? And he's like, oh, I'll tell you next time. And so it's just this really weird thing. And Misaki's just like, okay, I'm going to bed. So... You know, probably had the best of intentions with, like, a nice surprise date pickup, but, like, you had to know they all were waiting to hear.
Yeah, everyone knew he was taking the test, so it was going to be either one of two possible responses.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could have just said it.
Yeah.
It's hard to make it. It would be a surprise if no one knew he took the test.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they all very much knew he was out at that moment and were, like, eagerly awaiting it. And I believe he does go up pretty quick and say, like, hey, sorry, I was trying to surprise you. I should have just told you. And they pretty quickly make up. It's not, like, a big fight or anything.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, even though that was dumb, it's kind of weird for Misaki to seem to take offense to it.
Yeah, you know, throughout this whole... Okay, so the last podcast we did, Misaki was kind of the runaway, our favorite. You know, she was just... It was so cool to see things working out for her, and she was getting confident, and, you know, seeing her go after Burns, and it works out. She was different in this set of episodes here. She seemed, I don't know, a little more negative or high-strung or... I still like her a lot, but she was not quite the same as she was in that last set of episodes. Did you feel anything like that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I think maybe it was because she's not trying to, you know, attract a boyfriend anymore. She already has one, so it's like, you know, her walls are down a little bit. I don't know.
She's past the flutter stage.
She's, yeah. Now she's just
Now it's just like a steady
stationary,
hovering.
Yeah.
Yeah, hover. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense, no actually. That's what doctors say happen when the flutter period dies down.
Yeah, yes. I mean, some people say the honeymoon phase is over. Other people say they're no longer a flutter.
Most people say that. Yes. Well, girls, you know.
Yes, girls.
Yes. Women.
Little girls.
Women say that.
Women.
Females, I don't know.
Females?
How many different synonyms?
What are you?
Can they women, girls, or females? What's the problem?
Well, it's just weird whenever you say any of it.
There's no winning?
You saying girls say that is just a really funny quote, because whatever that was attached to is definitely wrong. You just know it.
All right, the fairer sex. Does that work?
Females. Who calls them females?
Well, that was my third thing after you told me the first two were stupid.
It was always going to be stupid, Dan, because cuties are so oblivious to what goes on in the life of a woman.
I know they don't actually say a flutter. I was kidding for the purposes of podcasts. Oh, goodness. All right. Get to the part where Burns watches. It's always that weird meta thing when on Terrace House, they're watching Terrace House. Mm-hmm. And he watches the episode where Hikaru rejects Misaki mm-hmm. when they have that like date by the city lights. And he's like, I don't like the core of your human being. So he watches that and is thinking, oh, he's a dick.
That was pretty rough, actually. Yeah,
not great.
I don't like you to your core.
Yeah. Hikaru, you know, now that we've seen all of Boys and Girls in the City, I think I can confidently say Hikaru was one of my least favorite cast members.
Yeah, I mean, bottom that was Makoto. Three. Yeah, there were some rough
Makoto, Hikaru, I would honestly say Riko and Hayato were probably contenders.
Well, they, you know, we'll get into it.
But, oh, yeah.
Oh, I think Nichan probably has some spot there. I mean, she's just so... you know, unhinged at times.
She was. I found her interesting, though.
Yeah, that's
whereas,
true.
Like, everyone, all the other people we talked about here, I was just like, man, you suck.
There was something about her, though, like, because she had, like, two really different opposite moods. She would be really hyper and happy and, you know, smile on her face, and then, like, really angry. And she seems like the kind of person that, like, if cameras were off and you caught her at the wrong time or, like, you said something she didn't like, she would just stab you repeatedly.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But at least it was interesting. Like, I remember her more than they're interesting murderers.
Well, the true crime addict, I completely agree with that.
Yes. So moving on to the next episode, Burns, newly driving capable Burns, takes Misaki on a drive, and they go to Yokohama, which is where she was rejected, and he kind of says, like, hey, let's try this again. Like, mm-hmm. I'd like to take you to this place and make it so you don't have this negative association with this area, which I thought was a nice little touch there.
Yeah.
And
he wasn't going to just accept that it was off limits.
Yeah, yeah. So good on him. And it works because he says he likes her, she likes him back, and they kiss. Mm-hmm. And so they make it official there that
they're an item.
They are an item. They are going steady. And I would say my favorite Terrace House couple I have seen on the show. And I've only seen Boys and Girls in the City, but they're my favorite.
There is Uchi and Minori.
Mm-hmm.
Barnes and Misaki. Who else?
We're going to see the beginnings of one by the end of this, but we haven't got there yet. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there were lots of like little almost things mm-hmm. like Yuriko and Tap and Arisa and Armand almost, but not. Yeah, I guess full on couples. There's only been a couple here.
Yeah.
So they said they're going to go camping, but it's basically just going to these nice-ass houses in the woods with, like, a skate park in it. Like, it's definitely not roughing it by any means.
Yeah, they just got a, like, Airbnb made of wood.
I mean, to be fair, it looked awesome.
It
looked really, really great. It looked like a lot of fun. But we got a couple weird moments here, actually. Mm-hmm. One of them is Misaki, while Burns has a camera, and they're kind of going through photos and stuff, and she sees an old picture of Burns' ex on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets real weird. Misaki gets kind of pissy. And I thought that was irrational because, you know, it could be one of those things where, you know, he only brings his camera out a couple times a year or something. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's, after every breakup, going through every SD card and hard drive he has and making sure there's absolutely no evidence that the relationship existed.
Right.
Like, I don't think anything bad was on Burns here by any means. And
yeah, yeah, I agree. And not every relationship ends in, like, you know, a garbage fire. Some people are still friends or whatever, so it could have been that. It could have been, like you said, it was really old, or maybe it was just really recent and he just hasn't gotten around to it. You know, there was a lot of explanations. I think she definitely jumped to conclusions.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just didn't even think things through. It was kind of an irrational response.
Yeah, but again, and this speaks well to the relationship, you know, they talked about it, and it seems like they got over it pretty quick. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good for that.
Mm-hmm.
But also another weird thing here. So there's kind of two things happening concurrently. You've got Rikkopin and Hayato down by the fire, and it seems like Rikkopin is trying to, like, make Hayato know that she's interested. And right. So she says basically all the things she said in that last set of episodes that she would only do if she was interested in someone. Like, hey, let's wear yukatas. Let's go to the fireworks or a festival or something. Like, let's do these things that she said she would only do.
You know, first, second, and third base.
Yeah, yeah. Yukatas, fireworks, and festivals. Yeah. Or theme parks. That's a home run. So while they're having that talk down there, Armand is trying to make a move up on this, like, balcony with Martha. And Martha is just kind of really distracted and everything. And Armand is, you know, doing his best. He's like, hey, do you want to go out? And at one point she says, I'm okay with that, yeah. Which is not the most confident-sounding acceptance of a date request. And it turns out, she talks later, that she's overlooking Hayato having this conversation on the fire, and her mind is elsewhere with this thing. Which, it's just kind of weird. It must be a purely physical thing because, you know, there's the one pasta-making thing, but it's not like there was just this, like, burgeoning chemistry between the two. I think she just thought he was cute. Yeah, and she's still really new in the house at this point.
I mean, I feel like if there was any kind of moments or conversations that would suggest that there was something budding between them, we definitely would have seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we didn't see any of that, so it seems like a pretty one-sided thing.
Totally, yeah. Then we move on to the next one, and Martha wants to have a quick lunch with Hayato when he goes on break at the Italian restaurant he works at. So they kind of get on the same page with stuff here. He says that he is concerned about going out with her because he knows that Armand likes her and that Rico likes him. And so he's like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't go out alone. And you know what? I don't think either of us like Hayato that much, but, you know, the logic is sound there. You know, that seems to be a reasonable thing to say.
It's one thing if they were just, you know, platonic friends, but he is obviously aware of her feelings and knows that it would be weird for Rico.
Yeah, and we're really starting to see that Martha's interested because, like, you know, she's getting distracted at the fireplace thing. She's asking for this break lunch. Like, she's, you know, full on going for it with Hayato here, and I think he kind of wants to pump the brakes a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's totally reasonable. So kind of a shocking thing here where I did not know how bad this was going to be. When they sat down, in the living room and Burns is shaken up and like the music is kind of non-existent and everyone's like, hey, what's going on? What's wrong? And he starts talking about how like, oh, Armand and I, we were going to the market on our skateboards. And just because of the tone, I was like, oh no, what happened here? Like, I didn't know how serious it was going to be. I was like, did he fucking... feel like I would have heard it if some reality show guy died, you know, in the midst of filming this thing. It is not that bad. It is still scary though. He got hit by a car and he shows up here like during this scene and like he must have got pretty fucked up,
right?
It's like he's got bandages like all over his like ears and his eyes and just kind of all over his shirt's torn up and everything. He's on pain pills, but other than that it doesn't seem like he's... Like, he seems maybe a little shaken up a little bit, but
he
like...
He looks like, to me, when someone in a cartoon gets into a car accident, what they look like after, like, all bruised and, you know, cuts everywhere and stuff, scrapes. That's what he looks like.
It's like after Wile E. Coyote runs off the edge of a cliff and pauses in air for a second and holds up a yipes sign, and then he falls into the ground and makes a perfect Wile E. Coyote-shaped hole, and then you see, like, an ouch sign come out, and he comes up and he's already, like, I guess he applied the bandages and everything while he was in the hole.
Right.
Which I don't know where he keeps that on his coyote person because he doesn't have pockets or anything.
Probably where he keeps the signs.
Oh, yeah, he always had that, too. And these are things I wondered a lot as a big Wile E. Coyote fan as a child. That is a perfect cartoon.
Mm. Was that the one with the beep beep?
Yeah, that was the Roadrunner. Wile E. Coyote. I think he wanted to eat the Roadrunner. I think there were probably some where he like would put on a bib and he would have like a fork and a knife and a plate and he was preparing, you know, when he bought his like Acme bird seed and he was painting the fake tunnel onto the brick wall or whatever.
I remember a lot of anvils.
Tons of anvils. He loved anvils and like weird contraptions. Roadrunner ran so fast that the actual road, the pavement would actually go up off of the desert sand as he ran behind it in its wake. Man, it's a perfect cartoon. Doesn't even need any dialogue or anything. It's itchy and scratchy. Mm-hmm. That's 100% what it is. Itchy and scratchy, also a great cartoon, even though it's a cartoon within a cartoon.
It's a classic for a reason.
It is. I like that. So during this whole thing, while Armand is sitting there bleeding, Burns just kind of brings up the Martha and Hayato lunch date, which Armand didn't know about. So that's just kind of an awkward thing.
Right.
It's kind of this like, oh, thank God you're alive. And, you know, Misaki's crying and all this stuff to Burns being like, hey, how about that date you two guys went on? And Armand's like, oh, come on, man. It's already, this day's already sucked. But then, yeah, we get to the Hayato and Riko date with the Yukatas, which I'm not familiar of with the cultural significance of the Yukata. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's just kind of more of a formal kind of datey thing or something, because, like, for Riko to say that she didn't do that with people that she didn't have, like, I don't know if we have something like that.
I don't know, but they seem to be the only ones wearing them at that festival.
Yeah, so I wonder if it's, like, an early courting attire or something. I don't know.
Early courting.
That females do. Sorry.
Well, they're a flutter.
It also felt, it's during the flutter period. Also, this fireworks show is badass. It is, like, I know they don't celebrate July 4th in Japan. Mm-hmm. It turns out that's an American holiday. But so I don't know when they do these fireworks shows, but God damn it. It was like that would have been one of the best July 4th fireworks shows I'd ever seen. And who knows, that could have just been Tuesday fireworks time in Japan.
It was like, you know how every fireworks show has the grand finale?
Yes.
Which nowadays I feel like it's like 5 minutes of normal fireworks and then 20 minutes of grand finale.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big, like, when is this thing going to end? Because they have to keep one-upping the thing. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not complaining.
No, 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 neither am I. But that felt like it was pure grand finale.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. But no hand-holding. We got the yukatas. It seems to be kind of a more formal date. But no hand-holding and also no visible chemistry whatsoever between these two. I just get a weird vibe from both of these folks, which, you know, we're going to find out maybe why some of this felt weird. But just, I don't see the chemistry whatsoever.
Yeah, and they are, like, when asked by their housemates, they will say, like, oh, you know, Hayato says, I don't really see her as anything more than a sister. Like, Riko says, essentially, that she's not really interested in him. It makes it seem like this is, like, dead before it even began.
Yeah, like, why are they even going through the motions and trying when, like, none of this seems to they're not getting close in any way, it seems. Because, there's that part after this where Hayato is talking to Burns, and Hayato just seems oblivious to the fact that Riko likes him a lot.
Right.
And Burns is like, how do you not see this? Like, this is super duper obvious.
Right, yeah. And Burns, essentially, like, they get into it a little bit because, like, Burns is frustrated that, like, Hayato seems to be playing games with Riko. And, you know, because Hayato is telling Riko that she should just concentrate on her career. But, you know, in the same breath, he's also kind of pursuing her.
Yeah.
So it's a weird situation. So then...
Yeah, then perhaps the biggest crazy time drama moment of Boys and Girls in the City happens. We're sitting around the table here, and Burns lets some folks know that he saw Hayato and Riko kissing by the elevator.
Right.
They were trying to hide it. So while they're doing all this stuff for the cameras, these very kind of pure, innocent dates and everything, they're sucking tongue.
Well, it wasn't even just the elevator incident. Like, sometimes he'll wake up in the middle of the night and see Riko in Hayato's bed.
Right.
So they're probably doing more than just kissing. And they're making it seem like not only is it a purely innocent relationship, but that there is no relationship.
Yeah, that they don't even like each other or recognize that the other likes them.
Right.
Because Armand says the thing about, like, yeah, I've noticed sometimes, like, you know, you get up and leave at, like, 4 in the morning and then, you know, you're in her bed or whatever, or vice versa. It is pretty much directly said that, like, hey, how long have you guys been sleeping together?
Right.
So it seems like people kind of believe that she is pretending to be pure and innocent on TV because she's got this, she has a lot of male fans, which I think you and I were both a little confused on this because they refer to her as an idol numerous times. And I guess we don't really know what that means or if we, I don't know if we have anything exactly like this in America because she's not a singer.
Right,
I think when I've heard, like, idol, I think, like, pop idol.
I would think, like,
that.
Like, oh, that means a member of, like, a J-pop band or whatever.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm not really, she doesn't have any discernible talents. She's not an actress or a singer. She's just, the cutest high school girl?
Yeah, she won, like, some beauty competition for, like, 18-year-olds or whatever. Yeah. Which actually, yeah, while we're talking about her and the idol stuff, you know, I think you might have been right earlier on, the swimsuit shoot.
Mm-hmm.
That probably was earlier on. And yeah, that it didn't really lead to anything in particular, but like it was this awkward thing right. where, what is she, 18, 19, something like that?
She's 18.
Yeah, and she's doing this, like there's these photographers by the pool that mm-hmm. are very much like, okay, let's see some more skin, do this. Mm-hmm. And she's literally like tears coming out of her eyes during mm-hmm. this. It is a uncomfortable
it
scene.
It is. It's very... very odd.
Yeah, it doesn't lead to anything necessarily in terms of like the house and storylines, but it's just kind of a quick glimpse into like, oh man, that's unfortunate.
Yep.
Yeah, and so I'm guessing her idol status is probably just like a modeling type thing, or I wonder if the analog here would be like a famous Instagram model or something like that.
Well, I'm sure there's like Instagram models in Japan too, right? Or Instagram influencers and all that stuff.
So maybe it's just the phrase idol, but I feel like idol I've heard for much longer than like Instagram has been around.
Sure.
So yeah, who knows? But she has male fans, and they don't want to make it seem like she is sleeping around or anything mm-hmm. while she's on Terrace House.
Yeah, so while this confrontation is happening at the table, Riko is pretty much the only one that responds. Hayato just sits there completely silent.
Oh, it's not only silent, but just like staring at right. Riko with this like, just giant unblinking eyes. And it's like creepy and robotic and kind of unnerving the way he's looking at her. Like, he's older. Like, he is just a part of this whole hiding as she is.
Mm-hmm.
He should be stepping in and taking responsibility and being like, hey, sorry. Like, I mean, he does kind of say it was his idea.
Right.
Like, oh, hey, I was trying to help her career or whatever. But, man, I just don't trust or like anything that's going on with this situation.
Yeah, it's very, very confusing. And at the end of it all, neither Riko or Hayato come out looking too good. I mean, they both lied to their housemates repeatedly. And, like, not only lied, but just orchestrated this whole, you know, narrative that, you know, like I said earlier, like an innocent relationship or no relationship at all.
And to sully the good name of Terrace House, a show that prides itself on being real reality TV, and they're going to show the real stuff that goes on behind these doors, and you're going to try to hide reality from Terrace House?
Well, Riko even said, I think it was during the table confrontation, that, like, she came on Terrace House to essentially sell herself. I mean,
yeah, she said she saw it as work, basically.
Right.
Which, you know, we brought up before, like, you know, maybe that was part of why Arisa did that mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, there are some that it definitely doesn't seem that way. It seems like a lot of them were just like, hey, this seems like it'd be a fun, interesting experiment while
mm-hmm.
I'm young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Armand seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of folks on this show do. But yeah, some may have had like kind of business savvy things behind the decision.
Sure.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Welcome to the Snapple Market Auditory Experience. Close your eyes. Imagine you're walking into your neighborhood store. You make your way to the back and reach for your favorite Snapple flavor. You can't wait. You take a sip. Whoa, that's a lot of flavor. Mmm. What flavor are you holding? Now open your eyes and check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavorful Snapple near you.
So yeah, they kind of leave the table and Hayato and Riko talk. It's just kind of tense and Riko seems just shell-shocked by the whole thing.
She is. And she thinks, you know, it was kind of wussy, not manly, she says, that Hayato didn't really speak up at all during the meeting.
Yeah, which, yeah. And then Martha comes home later into the living room, and everyone's kind of weird, and she doesn't know about it. And she finds out, and she confronts Hayato in the dining room, which, you know, good on Martha coming in there and just being like, hey, what the fuck? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, it was really tense between her and Riko because, you know, Riko knew that she had feelings for Hayato. And instead of saying, like, listen, we already have this thing going on, like, she just let Martha let her feelings kind of percolate a little bit and, you know, let her get led on by going on that lunch date. And then
yeah.
Disappointed, of course. So.
Yeah, Martha had every reason to be upset by this situation. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that she let him know. And then Hayato kind of tells Riko that he doesn't like her, basically. Mm-hmm. He's like, ah, oh, sorry, I just don't like you like that. But despite the fact that he's been leading her on and doing all this stuff,
right.
Like it's Hayato, Riko, I think, comes out not better. I guess a little better in relatively because Hayato was just older and knew what he was doing. And, like, he's definitely comes off worse of the two.
Right.
They both come out bad, though. But so Armand and Martha have drinks and go on a cruise. They've done a couple dates before at this point.
And Armand is such like a just solid dude. He's wearing a polo that has anchors on it.
Yes, for the boat date.
For the surprise boat date.
Yes. Nice work. And I thought it was really funny because there was a date earlier when they were having dinner on this like balcony at this restaurant. And he starts like he had this opportunity to say something really sweet to her about how like life has gotten more interesting ever since she joined the house. Mm-hmm. And right when he has the chance to say it, this like giant train just like goes by and just drowns out everything and ruins
and
the moment.
And he says it is a train.
Yeah, he's like, that's a train. And so this time, it's like right when Martha, right when Armand is telling Martha that he likes her, a fucking plane flies overhead. It's like
Armand can't catch any breaks.
It's like this Leslie Nielsen movie where like every time this big moment's going to happen, this stupid like a circus comes through. it's this really sweet thing where it's like, I'm so glad that, you know, Martha came in and was instantly into this kind of shitbag dude. And I'm glad that she kind of saw what he really is and nothing happened there.
And it was, I don't know if you remember, but it was kind of Armand's accident that brought them closer together because she kind of helped nurse him back to health.
And
everything.
Put the ointment on him and everything.
Yes.
And yeah.
Ointed him.
Yes. And they had a chat about, like, she was kind of worried because he said he was going to go back to Hawaii. And they kind of come to a conclusion where, like, okay, I'll go back to Hawaii for a few months. I got to take care of some stuff there. And then he's going to come back to Japan for her. And so it seems like they got something here. And it's great because these are two of my favorite people in the
house. Yeah, they're awesome.
For sure. And I thought they were really cool together. So that was nice to see. Let's see. At one point, they kiss under a bridge on a boat. And in this episode 45 here, we see Riko Pan doing whatever the fuck she does for work at some event where she just goes out in a yukata and holds a microphone and waves, and that's pretty much fucking it. That's her job, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't really reveal anything more about the mystery that is her idolship.
No, I kind of want to look up and just see what's going on with her now because it's, man, what the hell does she do? She's just one of the least... I'm not going to say least likable because she just kind of seems young and naive, but one of the least interesting members of the cast I've seen on this show.
For real, yeah. If it wasn't for the stuff with Hayato, it would have been like she would have been so inconsequential.
Oh, yeah. Before that Hayato stuff starts, she just has several episodes just sitting around and just kind of staring at people like nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a very eventful episode, except for it sets up that Hayato is going to, like, make one more shot at making this Riko thing work, even though he's, like, said, I don't like you. He's like, okay, I'm going to, after work on Monday, I'm going to hang around and I'll see if you show up and we'll have dinner together and that'll let me know that you like me. Mm-hmm. And that's the cliffhanger leading into the finale. And I like this last episode. They start with this little skit of all the panelists being in the house.
Right,
and, like,
the terrace house.
Yeah, it's like it was almost this weird jarring thing because we're so used to seeing the panelists and we're so used to seeing that room.
Mm-hmm.
But to see them together, it's like the Jetsons coming out of the Flintstones.
I would love to like walk through that house. It's so weird when you see something that you've seen a lot from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, my hometown, you could see the Garden State Plaza from the main street in my hometown. And if I'm walking on the street that's parallel to the main street, but in the town that, you know, the mall is in,
mm-hmm.
and I could look at the main street in my town from there, it looks completely different than what I'm used to. It's
yeah,
really jarring.
Yeah, just a shift in perspective.
Yeah,
you're used to it one way.
I'm so used to seeing it from, like, walking down it or driving down it, and then to see it from the other side, it's really weird.
You know, when I felt it the strongest was probably when I saw Letterman the first time live, because I had probably seen thousands of hours from that Sullivan Theater. And then to walk in and be like, oh my God, I remember seeing this doorway when like guests would run out here during skits, or oh, here's the aisles where he stands when he talks to the audience. And like, I remember SNL when we saw SNL, like the monologue stage, and just seeing like getting the sense of where all this stuff is, like that perspective. Like, you're so used to just like they're either doing the monologue or a sketch or a musical thing. Mm-hmm. And to see it all laid out and see the sketches moving around. And it was fascinating.
Yeah, it finally gives it some real context.
Yeah, yeah. And then you never quite see it the same way afterwards.
Exactly.
It was really cool. So yeah, they do the skit. And then it's Martha's birthday for this last episode. And it says, oh yeah, so they're having the birthday party. And they're all sitting around the table. Mm-hmm. And Rico shows up.
Right. She didn't go to the restaurant.
Yep. She said, sorry, Hayato, basically. And shows up at home, which, good for her. She may be young and naive, but she made the right choice there, I think. She escaped with her life, unlike so many other females.
So many female chefs.
Yes, who were once a flutter and are now 6 feet under. From floating above the ground to sleeping beneath.
Now 6 feet under.
Yes. That's my true crime book I'm working on. So I couldn't help but notice they're like, it is kind of this sad moment where you're seeing everyone kind of clean up the house, because like we've seen people come and go from this house, but we've never seen like the house has always stayed.
Right.
And so like seeing them clear out these rooms, it's like, oh no, like it really, really reminded me of, I know you never did dorms in college, but when the year ends and everyone's like clearing out the rooms and you see everyone like taking like these, you know, boxes of stuff down to like their parents are in a car and in the parking lot. And it's like, oh man, it's really like, it's ending, like all this stuff, like this place that we lived in for 9 months. It's just, it's all going to be gone. It really reminded me of that. But also, it looked like there was a bunch of Dragon Ball Z DVDs on the shelf when they were cleaning downstairs. And I was instantly wondering which one of the guys those belonged to. I don't think Hayato.
I would think Armand.
That's...
or Yuki.
Yeah, well,
or maybe it was just part of the house. I mean, Dragon Ball is a really big deal.
Every Japanese house comes stocked with a full set of Dragon Ball Z DVDs.
It could be.
That'd be awesome. My money's on Armand. Burns a possible second.
Yeah,
I would say.
I mean, he crumps after all.
Yeah, I don't know if you have time for crumping and Dragon Ball.
It's only one or the other.
I think so. Yeah.
They are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. They are, yes. Yeah. You either crump or you like Dragon Ball, right. I believe. You can. If anyone out there is listening, or handful of fans we have fanning the stream, if you crump and like Dragon Ball Z, please email us.
Yeah, let us know.
Yes, or if you just crump.
How do
all.
You manage?
Yes, how do you find time for the crumping and the Super Saiyan stuff? So we get a visit from Hansan and Nachan, which it was nice to see them. Like, it was nice to see Nachan removed from any dramatic context and just be like, oh yeah. It was nice to have her around. And then Hansan still just being way too cool for a reality show. Way too, just got all his shit together, you know. Selfless, intelligent, good future.
Talented.
Like, just the best. Like, he's the best.
Perfect.
Yes. And that's it. That's pretty much it. They do the quick visit and everyone does their big, like, hugs and like, oh, what a time we had here. And they all throw their keys in the bowl there and they leave the house and the door clicks shut for the last time.
So ends an experience I doubt any of those people will forget.
No, no. And so ends 46 episodes of Terrace House that we watched, 8 episodes covering it that we've done with Panning the Stream here. Mm-hmm. Definitely a Hall of Famer in this first year of doing Panning the Stream.
Yes, I'm so grateful for Panning the Stream and to our listeners for suggesting the show and bringing it into our lives.
Yeah, I don't think that we would not have ever seen the show without doing this podcast or hearing suggestions from you folks. And so for the final time, let's do our Terrace House Power Rankings.
Terrace House Power Rankings!
All right. I actually numbered my rankings this time, so hopefully we'll not get as confused here. Mm-hmm. So you want to start with mine and then we'll go to yours?
Yes.
Okay. My number 6. This is going to shock everyone. Hayato.
Me too.
Weird.
Yeah.
Who could have guessed Hayato would clearly be the shittiest cast member in this stretch of episodes?
I mean, he came into the house, the oldest one in the house. You'd think, I mean, at least there'd be an expectation of maturity, but instead he shows how emotionally immature he is by kind of taking advantage of this young girl. And, you know, ultimately both of them were a lot worse off for it. You know, they said they were preserving her image, but I mean, she's definitely come out a lot worse.
Yeah, but he leads her on. He tries to hide it from the viewers. He does not, like, when he's called out and exposed, he does not handle it well at all. He, like, just throws her under the bus and lets her do all the explaining. Every step of the way, Hayato, not a fan. Mm-hmm. Don't like him.
Don't like him.
Mm-mm. And I guess maybe we're on the same page with number five. I put Rico.
Same.
Yep. For reasons that are obvious at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, the Great Deception.
Yeah. Not a great cast member. Didn't do great stuff.
No.
So, number four.
Deep analysis here.
Yep, that's what we do here. Number four. Now, this is one of those number fours where it's like, yes, maybe it's on the lower end of the power rankings here, but I'm not in full-on negative territory here.
No.
There was just kind of a step down from the last time, and I think it was Misaki.
Same.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we both had her at number one last time, and yep. I stand by that. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's a terrible person or lost much, but she did seem just a bit more high-strung, and you know, it was getting dramatic over things that didn't really – like, they always patch things up quickly.
Right. But she was always the cause of it.
Exactly. And, like, I just wonder – you know, I don't even think they're together still. I want to say, like, none of these couples are together still.
Based on what I looked up, the cursory Googling that I did.
Yeah.
Misaki and Yuki aren't together anymore.
Okay.
Apparently, she joined a new talent agency or something and – had to like clear all of her social media out.
Okay.
So it's unclear like when the relationship ended. But Burns in his Instagram, there's no images of her at all. So
that's a shame. There was a time where they really seemed real great for each other. So hopefully yeah. It wasn't too shitty.
Well, hey, I mean, no relationship is a complete waste. I mean, you
that's
always
true.
End up learning something from relationship. If it's with a shitty person, you learn about what you don't want, which is just as valuable as, you know, learning about what you do want.
It is absolutely true. So, okay. Yeah, I don't think either of us dislike Misaki, but she took a little bit of a dip this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then number three, I've got Burns.
Okay, I have Martha for three.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she was great, but, you know, we just didn't really get to see too much of her.
Yeah, like, all told, I think she, was around just as long as Momo-chan was. Mm-hmm. The only difference was Momo-chan left, whereas, like, Martha, I bet if the show would have kept going, she would have stayed on
right.
longer. And I think she had more of an impact than Momo-chan did,
same.
Even in her
I
short
agree.
Time. So, yeah, I had Burns at number three. You know, nothing bad about him here, just like the Misaki thing. It's just like, you know, when he came in the last set of episodes, I think he did a lot to really endear himself right off the bat, and the really kind of sweet love story between him and Misaki.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, you know, nothing went bad this time. I just don't think we had the high highs that we had in the last set of episodes.
So I have Burns at number two.
Okay.
And I he has such high placement because obviously he seems like a great guy. But without him, I mean, he was the reason that Rico and Hayato's sordid relationship came to light.
That is true.
He had the balls to confront them in the, you know, house meeting setting and make for one of the most dramatic moments in Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City.
That is true. So, and he wasn't shitty about it by any
no.
means. He just kind of like, hey, this needs to be addressed. And he addressed it. Like, I don't think at any point, you know, Burns would occasionally have things where it's like, okay, well, your whole thing of surprising her with the driver's thing didn't work out great.
Yeah, or, but I don't think that was him being a bad person.
No, none of it was ill-meaning at all. Or like when he brought up the date in front of Armand, like mm-hmm. it was him just being absent-minded at worst, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think Burns is great. I got him at number three, but yeah, I see your argument for number two, considering he brought up that stuff. So for sure. My number two is Martha. You know, I've said before, I think Martha is great. She, you know, pretty short run here at the end, but really don't have anything bad to say about her.
Quality woman.
Big thumbs up. Yeah. And the number one, that leaves only one. And I think
there can be only one.
And I think that one is Armand for both of us.
Yes. And he would be, frankly, if we did a ranking of all the cast members of Boys and Girls in the City, he would still be number one for me.
In both parts?
Yeah, all together.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was just level-headed and he said what he meant and he went for it. And, you know, being an aspiring firefighter is a little odd, but I think he'll land on his feet. He seems like a really solid quality dude, the kind of guy that you could just rely on.
Yeah, and funny, mm-hmm. likable. Like, you know, even when he would have setbacks and stuff, he never really let it get him down. He just kind of moved on with his life. And he really did kind of embody that kind of like laid back surfer guy thing that he came in with, you know,
right.
like he just seemed like a solid dude. And he was, like we said before, the one that was here from the beginning to the end of part two here.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely one of the longest running cast members. And never really had much of a dip on him. I thought he was great the whole way through.
He was a great guy.
So congrats, Armand.
Yay, Armand.
It's 3 years later, you've got number one on a list on a podcast you'll never hear about. So live it up.
Some
you can celebrate
two random
tonight,
people in New York like you.
Yes. All right, so that'll wrap up Boys and Girls in the City, Terrace House. It's been a fun ride with you, Bonk, and thanks to everyone who's listened along.
Thank you.
And who has gave us the suggestion in the first place. And of course, as we thank every time, thank you so much for everyone who supports our podcast on the Listener Support Program. If you do not know what it is, it's basically a thing where if you go to pantingthestream.com, you click support this podcast, you can support us at $1, $5, or $10 a month, or you can just do it once, cancel it, no penalty or anything like that. It's all very simple, quick, and secure. And actually, since we've been doing these Terrace House ones, we do have some more supporters now. So let's go ahead, you know, as if you've heard Panning the Stream before, you know that when we get a new supporter, old Bonk here writes one of her trademark Bonk haikus.
Indeed.
We never called them Bonkus or anything, did we?
We can.
We can? Should we start? Is that... too easy, right? Or should we, is it
sometimes
good?
Sometimes easy is good.
Okay. All right. We got a Bonku. Got a Bonku for you coming up. Who do we have this week?
This Bonku is for our friend Chris H., who was nice enough to give us some money. So thanks, Chris. The wind through the trees. Is a storm coming this way? No, that's just Chris.
The wind. So he's the wind?
He's,
or he's
storm.
Wind-like? He's a storm?
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
Chris
or
is the storm.
Is he an ominous figure?
No.
Okay, it's a good storm.
But maybe.
It's like it's been in a drought for a long time, and you need a storm. And so Chris is the storm that comes and helps a harvest come through. Chris, you know what we're saying,
thanks
right?
Thanks for the harvest, Chris.
Thanks for the harvest, Chris. Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to get a hold of us and give us some feedback and let us know any
give
suggestions
us call at 444.
What? Is that a reference to something I don't know?
No, aren't all movie numbers
555?
555.
Yeah.
I was close.
We do not have a 555 or any other number. We do, however.
There's a taxi number. You ever see in the city those taxis that are like 666-666-6666?
I feel like I've seen that, and then I've known like pizza places when I was growing up would have it be like a bunch of numbers in a row. It makes it easy to remember.
Mm.
It's some good real estate in terms of a phone number.
Indeed.
But we have an email address, and that is panningthestream@gmail.com if you have suggestions and feedback. You can also follow us at panthestream on Twitter, and you know, you can pass along your suggestions and feedbacks there, and we'll take a look on there. We check that all the time.
We do.
We see all the mentions. We see all the emails.
We
do our
all.
Best to respond when
With
we
our
can.
Eyeballs,
for sure.
We see them.
We do. So, yeah, let us know either of those methods if you need to get a hold of us. What am I forgetting here? I feel like there's another thing here. Isn't there a thing, too? You do the email, you do the Twitter, you do the listener support. Oh, suggestions.
Do you have a suggestion?
I have a suggestion here I got back into. I haven't had these for about a year or so. A good taste in gummy vitamin in the morning.
Mm.
You know, I like a good Centrum because you just do the quick thing. You swallow it and you got your A to zinc right there.
Right.
But there's no enjoyment in a Centrum. In fact, if anything, you kind of worry it's going to lodge in your throat sideways. Which happened once to me and then I had problems swallowing for like 10 years afterwards.
Oh my gosh.
So a good gummy vitamin. Not going to get caught in your throat. Tastes real good. Get a nice little candy-like, gummy-like thing in the morning. Again, suggestions are never ads, but the one I specifically get are Smarty Pants vitamins. You take six of them in the morning there.
You have to take six of them?
Have to. Imagine something tastes like candy. Do you want to have one or six?
But you could just take one pill and instead you have to sit there and chew six gummies?
Yeah, but pills don't taste good.
But that's like 100 calories worth of gummies
in the
morning.
No, it's 50. It's 50.
Oh, my God.
It's worth it. It's a good way to wake up. Every time I wake up, I'm like, oh, good. I get to have this fun candy-like thing.
You know what I used to have? And this isn't because I have bone density issues. No, when this was occurring, I was like a pubescent girl. But I used to take those like calcium chews.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they were like chocolate. And like they were marketed chocolate. For like women who are like menopausal. But...
Oh, I would just have the Tums with calcium that were like the chalky ones.
Oh, no. These were like individually wrapped. And they were kind of like a chewy, chocolatey, almost like a Charleston chew texture.
Were they good?
Yeah, they were pretty good for a calcium chew. I remember when I was a kid, the same era, I was probably around 12. My friend Christina and I, we would walk around the town. And this one day, there were samples for these calcium chews in the newspaper. And all the newspapers were all on the front lawns. So we went around and we took the samples out of people's newspapers and we kept them for ourselves because we were idiots.
And so how long did that last you? It's our daily things.
I ate them like they were candy.
Okay.
Yeah. So not long.
Okay.
My suggestion this week is to not eat Jordan almonds because they're gross.
What are Jordan almonds?
When we were at that wedding yesterday, there were Jordan almonds attached to that gift that we got.
Yeah, I haven't eaten mine yet.
And they're terrible. It's like, you think almonds, that's pretty good. You think Jordan. All right, we know a Jordan. He's a decent guy. Jordan almonds are nasty. They're like they have like a candy coating, which sounds nice in theory, but it doesn't taste like anything other than sweet. And the almond itself doesn't really retain its crunchiness. It just kind of bends at the whim of this candy shell. It's a really disappointing experience.
So your suggestion is an anti-suggestion?
That's right. Yeah, avoid Jordan almonds.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I. What do you want?
I'm
looking out for you guys.
Going on the attack.
Well, what can I say?
All right, man. Stock is going to go down for these almonds.
Chocolate covered almonds are good. Almonds in general are really good.
I agree.
Roasted, salted, plain. You know, honey.
Yeah.
Chipotle
with some a little thing of cheese, and one of those little like protein pack things that comes with the almonds and cheese and raisins.
Your little healthy snack kits.
Yeah, it can be pretty good. All right.
All right. Well,
that's it for Terrace House.
Thanks, Terrace House.
Yes, thank you for all the good times, and thanks to all the Painting the Stream listeners and supporters for letting us know about its existence, because it's one of our favorite shows now.
Mm-hmm.
But we will be back next week, so just keep an eye on Pan the Stream on Twitter, and
just
you'll
one.
Know what to watch.
The other eye, you have to be on the lookout for the chef killer.
Yes, he's prowling around your streets, especially if you're in Japan. So make sure you're not aflutter and distracted. Make sure you know when he's coming. You'll hear his belt full of knives jingle jangling around his waist.
He will feed you delicious sorbet, and then it'll be sauced with your blood.
That's how he lures you in. All right, this dog is staring at Bianca and wants... What do you want, bud? He already had dinner. I think he just wants to be comfortable sitting on you.
All right, well...
We can make that happen.
That happen, buddy.
All right, folks, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week with more Painting the Stream.
Bye, guys.
Bye.